Well, in John chapter 9, you have one story. The text that Carl got to teach in John 7. John 7 is just it's just a mess. There's so much going on in John 7. He got to preach that. And John 8's got several different things going on. He got to preach that. Now we're back to John 9. There's one coherent story. I get this. Planning's everything sometimes. John 9. It's a hard teaching in a way. Because Jesus is walking by, and these people that he's with, these disciples, they have a notion that if someone is handicapped in some kind of visible way, then certainly there must be sin at work somewhere. And they say it pretty clearly. Is this blindness that this man has had from the day he was born? Is this his sin or the sin of his parents? And that message goes right to the core of so many hearts, perhaps even in this room. I know in this room, because I know that you've been in a place where you wonder what's going on in the life of your just born child, and it's not good. And the question is, what did we do? What did we do wrong? When our son Scott was born, and 4 or 5 days after he's born, he's got spinal meningitis, and they tell us he's got a 50% chance of living, and he's sitting right back there, so he evidently did okay. But you wonder what did we do wrong? Scott, for your benefit, we did not wonder what you'd done wrong at that point. But what if you had people who had this sense of sort of this karma notion that in a past life, in a past place, in some way you have earned up in your bank of what you deserve, you've earned up a birth in blindness. And when you get it, you're getting what you're due. What if you lived in that world? Jesus says, absolutely not. Absolutely not true. It is not true that what's going on in this man's life is the product, the result of sin that someone committed. But this man has the opportunity to let the work of God be seen in his life. And some people think that this notion is that he was born blind and set in this place just so he could be like a prop in a play, this play of Jesus going through Jerusalem, so Jesus would have him there to run into as a blind man. But I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right. I think the real statement is broader than that. It's broader than that, is that this man, like every other man, like every other woman, has come into the world, and even though it is his lot to be blind since birth, even in this blindness, he, like every other man and woman, has the opportunity to display the work of God in his life. And Jesus says, and frankly, we'd better get on with displaying the work of God in our life too, while it's still day. And he says, and while I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world. And as a demonstration of his ability to be the light in the world, he does something that you wouldn't put in the Bible, I don't think. You wouldn't put it down that Jesus spits in the dirt and makes mud. I wouldn't put that in. In fact, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want the hands of Jesus in the mud with his own spit, and he's making this mud, and he puts it on the eyes of you don't want your children to even know that story, do you really? And Jesus, this man who's been born blind, he anoints his eyes with not some special sacred oil but this mud. And he says, now walk down to the pool of Siloam. Walk down there. And in Jerusalem, the temple is sort of up in this central part of Jerusalem. And then you come downhill from the temple a quarter of a mile or so. And you're down at a place called the Zion, the city of David. And then when you go on down the Kidron Valley and on down around the point, about another quarter of a mile, down a quarter of a mile at the end of the point, then there is the Pool of Siloam. And so he's got a little walk. Somebody's got to help him. Maybe he knows how to navigate that. I don't know how he gets there, but when he gets there and he does what Jesus says, he washes his eyes off in the Pool of Siloam. When his eyes wash off, as the mud is washed away, the light shines into his life in a way that it has never done before. His optic nerve is really surprised. At an array of light and dark and colors and all kinds of hues that he had never seen before. And now he comes back into his life. He walks back in as a sighted man. And you have all this talk. Is that the guy? Is that the blind guy? Is the guy who's blind? I don't think that's the one. That guy can see. Can he see? But he looks like the same guy. I don't know. What is he doing? And he's there going, I'm the guy. I went to the Pool of Siloam as a blind man. I've come back as a sighted man, but I'm the same guy. And if you read the story, it just gets to being almost comedic. The Pharisees, he's hauled into the Pharisees, and the Pharisees are going, now tell us how you got your sight. Well, there was this man, he anointed my eyes, and I went and washed, and I got my sight. Well, he can't be a good man because it's the Sabbath day, and on the Sabbath day, people don't make mud in the dirt with their own spit. And so whoever it was that touched you, they can't be a righteous man because they did this. He said, well, I don't know if they're a righteous man or not, but I do know this. I was blind and now I can see. I think he's probably a righteous man. Who ever heard of God answering the prayers of an evil man? How would an evil man be able to cure a man born blind? And they don't know about that. And so they talk some more. And then the Pharisees, they haul in his mom and dad. Recently thought about as being the sinners who made him blind, but now they're hauled into the Pharisees and the question was this son of yours really born blind? Well, we know he's our son, and we know he's born blind, yeah, and we know he can see, yeah, but more than that we don't want to tell you. You can talk to him. He's of age. And you have the mother and the father. They're backing out. It's the greatest day of their life. I mean, this should be the greatest day of their life. Our son can see. The son's never seen his mother. The son's never seen his father. And the first time the son sees a mother and father, they're doing a tap dance in front of the Pharisees trying to keep their membership in the synagogue more than celebrating his sight. I just think it's horrible. Congratulations, son. Happy sight day. You get to see your mom and dad washing their hands of you. Okay. It's just an odd sight. And after they've sent him away and he's all alone, his parents have gone and the Pharisees have gone and the friends are gone and the man is walking through Jerusalem. Jesus knows that he's been pretty well put out in the dark on the day of his sight. Jesus goes to him and basically kind of says, so how's it going? Would you be willing to believe in the Son of Man? Well, I would. Who is he? And Jesus says, I am he. And the man falls and worships Jesus. And Jesus says, you know, you couldn't see, but now you can see clearly. And there are people over there who say they can see, but they don't see at all because they don't see me. And there's some Pharisees standing around. They're always standing around, aren't they? They say, are you talking about us? And Jesus says, basically, yes. You think you can see, but you can't. And chapter 9 closes. It's a great chapter. That opens with this man being accused of being the sinner that caused his own blindness in utero. It sees him walking to Siloam with mud on his eyes, walking back, sighted into the confusion of Pharisees and parents and friends, and finds himself worshiping before the Lord Christ. Thankful that indeed Jesus is the light of the world. And it's true that he is now this one in whom the work of God is made visible. This morning I want us to see ourselves as having the same opportunity that the blind man always had. That the blind man was one who was able to be a place where the work of God could be seen, even before he's healed. And all of us who are here this morning, some of us have some physical disabilities, huh? Got a few physical disabilities, that's right. And there are some folks in our auditorium this morning who can really get in touch with this story in a powerful way because they are indeed themselves blind. We don't take those disabilities lightly, not one bit. But whether we have these kinds of physical disabilities or if perhaps we are sitting here as ones who are scarred and disabled in other ways, perhaps we look back at a childhood that wasn't exactly what it should have been. Maybe our father was a drunk, or our mother was abusive, or that's flipped, or maybe they took turns. Or maybe we didn't get the opportunities we should have gotten. Perhaps we have this family history, this family origin. Perhaps we ourselves have made mistakes in our past that are not the kind of mistakes that you just wash off with soap and water. Maybe there's some kind of record that follows us. Maybe there's some kind of thing that when we apply for a job, it shows up and it's a kind of this permanent scar on us. I don't know what it is. Maybe there is just something about you that you have a personality that makes people kind of want to clear out. Maybe you're just not plain vanilla. Maybe you're not even in the case at Amy's. They can't even find you. And that's the way it is. And you're kind of glad that I mentioned you at this point. And you've just been this person all of your life. Maybe you're just a mess, you think. And that people have always thought that you were just a mess. Or maybe right now you're like our sweet Beverly over there. You're kind of going through this stinker of a mess right now with this cancer, and you just don't know what to do with that some days. It's just not good. And what I want you to hear, and what I want all of us to hear, is that we are all cordially invited to hear God say, where you are right now, and who you are right now, you can be a person in whom the work of God is seen in a powerful way. God is already at work in your life. If you're in this room this morning, God is already at work in your life. If you're in this room this morning, God has already been busy today drawing you to Himself. God has already been busy working through whatever handicaps you have physically, through whatever personality type you are psychologically, with whatever kinds of emotional scars and reflexes that you have. God has already been at work in us this morning, telling each one of us, if we'll hear it, where you are today, who you are today, the people you're going to meet today, the opportunities you're going to have today, the disappointments that are in your past, the successes that you've known, all of this is going together today to make you into a person who in this very day can be a demonstration that God is at work in the world. That you are a work of God in the world. Now this is quite a different way of coming at life than to be able to use what has happened to us in our life as a way of getting the get out of life free card. Well, you know, you shouldn't expect too much of me. After all, look what I grew up with. Well, you shouldn't expect too much of me. After all, look what I look like. Well, look, you shouldn't expect too much of me. Well, I've probably told you this before, but I'm going to tell you again. I would always start my class at ACU with the freshmen, and I would say, sometime during this fall semester, the devil is going to whisper in your ear that the reason you are the way you are is because of your parents. And because of that, you don't have to study. You don't have to become anybody. You get to just become a zero because it's all your parents' fault. And you'll hear it. Well, my mom never gave me the love I needed. My dad was always gone. Therefore, I get to be a zero. Well, my parents were always there. They loved me all the time. Always had everything I needed. I never had to work for anything. Never had to. Therefore, I get to be a zero. Well, I had to go work. And I've been working my job all the time. I've been independent. And my parents didn't do all this. And therefore, I get to be. Well, I was. There's a script. The devil writes you a script that is the get out of life script. It says because of your handicap, because of your personality, because of your experience, because of your failures, because of your successes, whatever it is, you don't have to be, you don't have to do, you get out of life free. But Jesus does not come into the world to validate anyone's victimhood. Jesus does not come into the world to feel sorry for anybody and just leave it there. Jesus comes into all of our lives and says, this is done so that the work of God might be displayed in this life. And God begins to work in us, and He gives us sight that we have not known. Inner sight and outer sight. He changes what we can hear. He changes who we can touch. He changes how we make our decisions and how we see the future. He changes how we see the past and how we forgive it. God changes us and we become a testimony to God's work in our life. And the church becomes a fellowship, a communion, not of people showing their victim cards and telling each other how they get out of life free, but as a constant demonstration to one another that God is indeed doing something good in their life. It's pretty good. And Jesus comes along to us at the end of the day and says, would you believe in the Son of Man? And we can play dumb for a minute with Him and go, who is He? And He looks at us and smiles and says, I am He. And we fall before Him. And we worship. Before I leave you, I want to think about one more thing. Because I want to think about that narrative. Why is this happening to this person who sinned? And it may not be the right thing to do, but this just bushwhacked me as I was going through John chapter 9. And I was thinking about Jesus carrying the cross to Calvary. To Calvary and at the various junctures as people who might not have known the story, they could have said, who sinned? That this would happen to this man. Who sinned that he would carry this cross? Who sinned that he would be blood-streaked as he is? Who sinned that his footprints, Huslig's, are bloody on the pavement? who sinned? And the answer was, we did. We did. We did. He was willing to be crucified, to suffer as an innocent for us. And that doing that was His display of the work of God in His life. I'm so thankful that Jesus said to us, don't think of your scars and your wounds and your background so deeply, but turn and let your life be a display of the work of God. And I'm so thankful that His commitment to do the work of God as the light of the world led Him to be the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. So here's how we put all this together today. Because Jesus has gone to the cross and done His work, because we've been buried with Christ and raised with Christ, we're now able to walk as the works of God in the world. Not just to be saved and set on the shelf ready for the life to come, but as living, walking demonstrations day by day, every day to the world that look what God has done. Look what God has done in their lives. I hope we can leave our victim language behind, the whining and the oh poor me's on the shelf, that we can take up who we are now in Christ and live to the glory of the One who has called us to Himself. Let's stand and sing joyfully together.